I'm ready to go.
All right. All. Oh, I impulsively shaved my arms again.
Again?
Yeah.
You have no body hair. Like, none at all.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spook Me. I am Nicole.
And I'm Emma.
And guys, I feel like I haven't talked to you in a long time. I feel like it's been a while, but it really hasn't been that long, but maybe I'm just lonely. But I wanted to give a big little shout out to everyone who is new listening to us. I'm pretty sure I do this pretty much every week. But I saw that Ireland and Japan popped up for our countries. And I was so excited. So hello to any of you from those
Hello, countries. New friends.
Because that is just so exciting. And I hope you like what we're doing here. And I'm sure more U.S. states have joined. But my apologies to the U.S. states, but you're less interesting than countries. So, yeah, I hope any of you listening will have a good fright tonight, a good spook. So this episode is going to absolutely terrify me, and it did last night, because I was writing it last night, and I had to continue writing it today. I woke up early so I could finish writing this, because I was so scared writing it at night. So I couldn't handle it. The only other time that happened to me was when I was writing the Amityville episode and I couldn't sleep at all that night and didn't sleep a wink. So,
well, yeah. That means it's a good case then.
You're right. So I do have to give a big, giant, huge disclaimer about this episode. We talked about doing like murders, crimes from like close to our towns, and because Emma and I both live in like kind of small-ish towns, like not that much stuff happens, I guess, there weren't cases that were like huge standout cases for us. So we kind of had to go like around our towns a little bit. So you really couldn't find that much. You mentioned that your dad said that there was one in your town.
It was kind of just like an open and shut thing. Like there was not a lot of...
Yeah. Oh, and maybe I didn't know. Oh, I heard about the Children of God one. I don't know if you've heard about
that. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that Jehovah's Witness was a cult.
I guess some people, I don't know if it technically is considered one, but a lot of sexual abuse happened, like child abuse happened.
I mean, that's like the Catholic Church too, but...
Yeah, oh.
But we ain't ready for that conversation yet.
But I feel like that, yeah. It's religion and stuff. Oh, God. We can't get into religion. But the first one is called Nexium. Ooh. And I had never heard of it. And it was horrific. I could not believe it. And I watched the United Nation of Islam. I watched that. And right now I'm watching the World Peace Unification Sanctuary. And
ew.
I hate it. I absolutely...
That sounds disgusting.
It is really scary. And I can't believe that that is real. So... anyway, so I highly suggest watching that. I think we should do an episode on cults for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, everyone, I'm a dummy and I forgot my iPhone adapter for my microphone. So I'm just speaking into my phone. So if you hear any background noise, it's probably my family and my dogs. So just ignore it if you can. Okay. That's beside. Okay. Let's get back to the case. All right. So. Today, we will be talking about, like I said, the case that happened very close to home to me, and it was the murder of Kimberly Cates and the almost murder of her daughter. So, like I said, if you don't want to listen, goodbye. If you do, hello, welcome.
Hello.
And let's get started. This murder happened when I was around 9 years old, I think. It happened in 2009, so I was either 9 or 10, depending on the month, I guess. And I heard a lot about this case when it happened. because my family had friends, and well, in turn, I guess I had friends that lived in the town that this happened. So that immediately, my parents were like, okay. So
yeah,
when like my parents found out that somebody had been murdered in that town, they were like glued to the TV to figure out, do they know who this person is, you know?
Right.
And we didn't know who it was. We didn't know the Cates family, which I'm like thankful for, just because I don't know if I could handle that. But I, the people who are friends with them, I have all the power to you, because I don't know how you handle that.
But so awful.
When I was a kid, like when I was in school, I think I was in middle school around this time, and it was all kids talked about for like a week. Because they just like to say that they knew more, this person knew more, all this dumb shit, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I eventually ended up asking my parents at some point, like, what had actually happened. And obviously, they're not going to tell me, like, what happened, because I'm 9 years old. But basically, what they told me was a brief synopsis of how some lady was killed and her daughter was really, really, really badly hurt. And we had friends in their town, so that's why it was scary. So that's basically all I knew. I feel like it was so weird, because I actually started talking about this with my mom, like, today. I told her, like, what case we were doing, and she was like, I brought something up about it, and how, I'll talk about it a little bit later when it comes up in the case, but we were just, like, talking about it, and it was so weird, because there's a point in the case where the daughter and the mom are sleeping in the same bed because the father's away on a business trip, and my mom and I did that all the time, because my dad was a big like business guy, and he still is, but you know, but he traveled a lot, and I always slept in her bed. And apparently, like, very soon after this case happened, I stopped doing that, and she thought it was because of this case, but I was like, no, I never I was like,
that's so
that
scary.
Never even crossed my mind, like, I never even, yeah, but I thought it was funny that she thought that that's why I stopped sleeping in her bed. But anyway, before we get into what actually happened with this case, we have to know a little bit of background about the town. So, this crime took place in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire. And this place is near and dear to my heart because, yes, we have friends that live up there. But also because this was the place that I drove around aimlessly for hours, guys. Like, I'm talking... Ask Emma. We drove around.
It is so beautiful there.
It's gorgeous. And we could go down any single road, and I knew my way. Like, we were driving all over the place. Like, we drove by this house. Like, because I've driven by it many, many, many times. So that's horrifying, you know. Just cute little things. But, like, I know this town so well, and it's a very small town. The population is about 2,500 people. And to put that into perspective, I have about 15,000 people in my town, which I could not believe, by the way. And you have about 23,000, I looked.
I literally was just typing. I was like, how many people do it? Yeah.
So, like, in comparison, this is a small town, everybody.
Very small.
So, I know that's very... small town murder. Can't believe it happened. Stereotypical case, but it's sad that that's a common cliche, but there it is, everyone.
So Kimberly Cates was a 42-year-old woman who had a husband named David Cates, and together they had an 11-year-old daughter named Jamie Cates. On the day of the murder, October 4th, 2009, David Cates had been away on a business trip. The day was normal, but when night rolled around, the real horror began. Around 4 a.m., Christopher Gribble, Stephen Spader, and two other accomplices broke into the home of Kimberly and her daughter Jamie, armed with knives and machetes. There were quite a few accomplices in this case, so I'm just going to touch on those in a little bit. But all you really need to know for now is that Christopher and Stephen were the leaders here. Stephen's main target was the mother, Kimberly, and then Christopher's main target was the daughter, Jamie. That is so gross.
They didn't. So the thing about this is really hard, because they didn't have targets, because they didn't know that anyone was in the house.
Oh, but like maybe once they saw them, they were like, I'll take this one and you take that one.
Yeah, it was like they didn't even discuss it. They just like did it.
Right.
So, like, but that's just the way it ended up in the end. So, just to clarify.
Right. Steven Spader stabbed Kimberly 36 times in the head, torso, left arm, and left leg. The autopsy later reported that the official cause of death was the blows to the head. 36 times, that, like, to me, that seems personal.
Honestly, it wasn't. Like, that is the which is bizarre. Yeah, this is my worst case scenario type of murder, which sounds weird.
but like, it's just like a fucking stranger coming in your house and killing you.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. They call it like a thrill kill.
Makes sense.
So that's exactly what it was, and yep, it was just aimless. It was just for no reason, and that's the worst kind.
Yeah, that's what I always, like, when I was little, especially, like, I was always afraid that, like, someone would just break into our house and, like, kill us.
No joke, I'm so afraid of that, like, still. Like, it's just...
Same. Like, I mean, obviously, it happened. It's rare, but here, it happened here. Like, information out there, but maybe if we do, like, another one of these, we could, you know, I could slide it in there.
Right, yeah. Well, that was the same with me. I was, like, trying to research, and I guess there was one... or two, but one that was very mysterious and, like, was never solved. And I was like, okay, cool. Where this guy was, like, dumped in these, like, sand pits. And I was like, oh.
Oh, my God.
In, like, the 80s or something. But anyway, that's not this case. But because we are doing one, I wrote about a case that is close to-ish my hometown. So it's, let's just put it that way. And... it is a case that did not happen that long ago. So about 10 years ago this happened. And it was a case that really rattled everyone in my town, in any town around this town. So,
and rightfully so. It is a frightening one.
It's absolutely horrifying. And I remember being, like, very horrified as a kid. And if any of you have any connection, I'm sure you can put the pieces together. If you know, like, where I'm from, which some of you I know you do. If you know where I'm from, you know what case I'm going to talk about, because it was... all people talked about. So if you have any connection to that whatsoever, if you have any emotional connection, if you, I don't know, if you felt really scared by this whole thing and you don't, I don't know. But I would suggest not listening to this, because I'm going to treat it like we treat the other podcasts and the other episodes we've done.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like our... goal, but because we like true crime, I like it because I feel like it's incredibly unjust when these things happen to people who are good people, like when people who don't deserve to get murdered. No one deserves to get murdered, you know. But like, I think people need to know that these things can happen in life and you need to be aware. But I also think every single case we do is someone else's too close to home case.
Exactly. So yeah.
This just happens to be mine, and it doesn't make it any less terrifying. So, but that's my warning. If you don't listen to this, we are not going to be offended. I just wanted to give a full fledged warning, and please don't, like, cause a controversy. I don't want to get canceled from my own hometown, but
no, I don't think anyway. You will.
But anyway, everyone. Oh my God, I forgot to say. So, speaking of, like, too close to home situations. This girl that I went to summer camp with, I saw her post on Facebook the other day about how her mom went on a date with Ted Bundy in high school.
No fucking way.
I literally, like, I had to read it again because I was so shocked that was true. I was like, that's
fucking absolutely... imagine that.
I cannot imagine that. So, great. Great
that
to
know. That is really scary.
Also, doing this case kind of made me think of, like, all the horrible things that happened in my own town. And I was like, you know, just, like, take inventory. Yeah. Like, great. But anyway, there's your warning. If you don't want to listen, great. If you do, well, welcome. Hello.
Even greater.
But let's just get into it. Oh, my God, wait. Hello. We were just talking about this over text, but... I wanted to say that I have been obsessed with Cold Case Files on Netflix. Oh my God, yes. So we watched that. What was that thing called?
Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah. So we both watched that and we liked it, but it was very frustrating that they were not solved.
Yeah, and like my feelings on unsolved cases is I like to hear about them every once in a while, but like I can't like binge watch or like listen to podcasts or whatever about unsolved cases because I just get so angry. Like I get really frustrated.
Yeah, it's because I want, like, in my brain, I'm like, I have to solve this. Like, this is my duty now to solve this.
It's my job.
But with cold case files, they have solved them, like, 30, 15, like, years later.
Yeah.
Which is equally as, like, incredible and, like, scary at the same time. Some of them, I will say that the ones in cold case files are really sad. Like,
they are sad.
But it's just so interesting to me. I don't know. They were really good. So I highly suggest that. But I also, because I finished that, but now Emma's watching that, I started watching Extreme Cults and Beliefs on Hulu. Good God, guys. You know when you like think you know what to expect when you learn about a cult, but then it's like, oh, you don't. And it's like, here's this little fun fact about this cult you thought you knew about or you didn't know anything about, and let's just horrify you. I highly, highly suggest watching this because, oh my God, it makes me want to vomit.
As soon as I finish Cold Case Files, I'm watching that.
It is so scary. They started with, what did they start with? It was one that I knew about. But then the second episode was Jehovah's Witnesses, and I was
like, oh my God.
Oh, because I kind of like, I never really knew they were like a cult, you know, like I knew that I heard speculation. And you hear about how people don't trust them, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
But, like, I always thought, I didn't really think anything of it, but.
Pieces of Jamie's left foot were cut off, and Christopher struck her with enough strength to split her head open and break her jaw. Ooh, I don't like that.
Nope, it's so bad.
The doctors later stated that these injuries were sustained from a heavy sort of weapon, most likely a machete, which is what they had, so makes sense. For an 11-year-old girl, Jamie was quick to think on her feet. She thought the only way there would be a potential to survive this horrific attack would be to play dead. So that is exactly what she did, long enough for the attackers to leave the house. That is like, can you imagine?
She's a genius.
Like, it must have just been like adrenaline or like, you know what I mean?
Yes. Like how, I honestly don't know what I would do in that situation. But like,
I would probably do that.
She's a genius for doing that.
Yeah, and like now at 20 years old, I would probably like think to do that, but like I don't know if I would have when I was 11.
And I just think like she didn't know if even if she did play dead, if he was gonna stab her again, you know, like what would happen. Like you never know with killers like this. And I just think I can't believe, I'm sure she's heard this a million times, but like she's so like,
she's very brave. Yeah,
because like, oh, I can't imagine. But like, that is insane to be that smart at 11 or 12.
However old she was.
But like around that age to be that smart.
Then when she was sure they were gone, she slowly stumbled to the phone in the kitchen and was able to call the police. Doctors said later that if Jamie had lost consciousness before she was able to call the police, she most likely would have died from a punctured lung wound, which is really scary.
Oh my God. Ah! She just like literally escaped death.
Literally, that's crazy.
Around 4:15 a.m. on Sunday, October 4th, the 911 call came through to Milford, New Hampshire Police Department. Police Sergeant Kevin Furlong was the one who responded to this call. And he was immediately sent to 4 Trow Road in Mount Vernon. When he got there, he was able to see that there was a light on within the house, so he very cautiously started to approach. He broke through the front door, and as soon as he did, he saw Jamie Cates, completely bloodied and looking back at him. She was still conscious and told the officer that someone killed her mom, but that was pretty much all she was able to say at that point. Kevin carried Jamie outside, and I went back into the house to see if the intruder or attacker was still in there. But instead of finding the attacker, he instead found the body of Kimberly Cates in her bedroom. So here we have, like we said, one of the most terrifying scenarios of the random home invasion, the thrill kill, as it was called. So now we have to talk about the intruders and the other people involved outside of actually committing the murders. So I know I mentioned earlier that we're going to have a lot of people involved in this case. But to sum it up for you, just right off the bat, there are the two main killers. There are the two accomplices that were also there that night. And then there is one accomplice who helped with evidence. That's that. I'm going to break it down a little bit more. But that is the gist, so you can keep track a little bit of that for now. So good luck. Shortly after the murder, the police department received a call from a teenager who said he knew the people who were involved with the murder. He told police that Stephen Spader and Quinn Glover had told him in great detail what had happened at the Kate's home the night of the murder. He also told police every detail of what they had told him about that night, including that Glover and Spader went into the house on Trow Road with the intent of attacking the mother and daughter that lived there, which we know now is not true because they did not know they lived there. Or that they were home.
Right.
The teenager, well, okay. Going back to that, I think that most of the accomplices didn't know, but I want to say that I really do think the guy who, Stephen Spader, he was kind of the ringleader. I think he knew that they were there. That's just my opinion, but.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Anyway. The teenager also recounted that Glover and Spader had showed him at two knives that were used in the attack. The police knew that they had to jump on this lead ASAP and find Spader and Glover as fast as they could. Later that night, they ended up finding Stephen Spader, Christopher Gribble, and Autumn Savoy. They were all taken into custody on the suspicion of having involvement with the murder. When Autumn Savoy was originally questioned, he gave an alibi for both Stephen Spader and Christopher Gribble. However, later on...
Autumn is a woman?
Autumn is a man.
A man?
Yes.
I've never heard of a man named Autumn.
Me either, but I guess creativity, right? However, later on in the case, Savoy goes on to tell investigators pretty much everything he knew about the investigation, and even how he had helped Spader and Gribble to dispose of some evidence from the crime scene by throwing it into the Nashua River. So there you have, this is the accomplice that was not there that night. This is Autumn Savoy.
Mm-hmm. The next day, October 5th, investigators were notified that a student had told a resource officer that he had been threatened by someone that was being held in questioning at the time. When asked to elaborate on this so-called threatening, the student told officers that the teens in questioning had told him details of the attack, threatened him, and that he had accompanied Gribble to the mall to pawn off some jewelry that he stole. So now we have two people coming forward and telling investigators that the teenagers in questioning had told them all about the brutal slaying. Yeah, so this kind of feels like these people are proud of what they've done. And, like, they they're bragging about it. And that sort of reveals a motive.
Right. Because I was thinking, like, the only other reason that you would tell somebody about what you did is by accident, like if you just let something leak.
Right.
Or you are so afraid of what you did that you, like, tell somebody what happened, you know?
Right. But I feel like in this case, they were not scared.
Yes. And we'll go on to talk about that later in the podcast, but that is the case. They knew what they were doing and they were not afraid of it.
Right. Okay, now we're going to be introducing a new character. This is William Marks, who was also a high school student with Quinn Glover.
And they were in class the day after the killing, just so everyone knows.
Okay, gotcha.
Which makes you want to vomit, but that's cool.
Ooh. Imagine, like, going to school with someone and, like, the night before they killed someone. However, police caught up to them and had brought them into questioning by the end of that school day. Also, this is a side note here that Stephen Spader was a high school dropout and Christopher Gribble was homeschooled. So that is why they both were not attending any sort of school at the time of these murders. Christopher being homeschooled is important later. So we'll put a little spooky tab on that note for now. With the suspicion on Glover already, the police knew they needed to pull something out of this teenager. At first, Glover did admit to being in the Mount Vernon area around the time of the murder, but before the investigators could get any more information out of him, he asked for an attorney.
Oh, God. I've been watching a lot of true crime, as I just talked about. When people ask for attorneys in true crime, it makes me so angry. Yes, they have the right, absolutely, have the right to ask for an attorney. And sometimes it's for the better. But sometimes when you know that they have information, you know that they could just say, I did it, I was part of it, it's just infuriating.
Right. But his buddy, William Marks, was not so hushed about the whole situation. He began to tell investigators all about the night of the murders. Murder. There was one murder. He told them how initially he went into the basement of the house but couldn't find a way to get inside the actual home. Eventually, he was able to find his way inside and heard a woman speaking. He recalls that she said, quote, Jamie, is that you? End quote. And then he heard her say a combination of things such as, quote, you don't have to do this, and, quote, you're going to be okay. Which is really, really, really sad. Marks then traveled into the bedroom and saw that Kimberly had been brutally murdered and that Jamie had also been attacked. He later told investigators that he helped his buddies find the Trail Road house to break into. He stated that they believed the house had been empty up until they heard Kimberly speak.
So, again, with he is not the ringleader, I'm thinking, for some reason, I think that Steve and Spader knew that the house wasn't empty.
Yeah, I mean, if they, you know, like, the way I think of it is, first of all, they came armed. They right. had knives and they had a machete or whatever. And if they were spooked and had to kill them just because, you know, whatever, like, they felt like they had to kill them because they were caught, robbery gone wrong or whatever. But, like, I feel like the attack on them wouldn't have been so brutal if it was just like a heat of the moment kill. You know what right. I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
36 times is such overkill. Like, to me, it feels like he knew what he was going to do and he wanted to do that.
Yes, exactly. I also believe that. On October 6th, it was released to the public that the four suspects had been arrested and arraigned at the Milford Court District. Or Milford District Court. The suspects were Stephen Spader, Christopher Gribble, William Marks, and Quinn Glover. Now, this next part is truly heart-wrenching, like genuinely so sad. So I'm going to give you a fair warning again. It is about the daughter, Jamie, and she is going to recall the account of the attack. So you've been warned about that. It's really sad. I genuinely got teary-eyed writing it last night. So that's what, after this, I had to stop. So in Jamie's interview with investigators, she told them how the night of the murder, she had been sleeping in her mom's room and they had been sharing the mom's bed when all of a sudden her mom woke up because she thought she heard some noise within the house. Her mom went to go and check the door to see if anything was there. And that was when Kimberly was attacked by who we now know to be Stephen Spader. Jamie, being very young at the time, told investigators that her mom had been attacked by a sword. And obviously we can conclude that this was the machete. That is so sad.
That is really sad.
Jamie immediately tried to help and protect her mom, but then she was the one starting to get attacked as well. This next part is pretty gruesome and very violent, so there's another warning right off the bat. Jamie tried to run out of the bedroom to escape the scene. But Christopher Gribble was right there to grab her. He stabbed her once, puncturing her right lung, and then tried to stab her in the heart through the back.
Oh my God.
He threw her into the sliding glass door, kicked her, and slashed her in the face with the machete. After this was when Jamie decided she was going to play dead, as Gribble went to see if the mother was still alive. After realizing that she was, in fact, dead, all of the intruders left the house, and as we know already, this is when Jamie was able to call the police. In later interviews, Gribble told investigators that if he had known that Jamie was playing dead, he would have killed her. Oh, I hate that. So, now we have heard Jamie's account of the attack, but let's get into the way Christopher Gribble talks about what happened that night. You can watch his account of the murder on YouTube. So, this guy, I sent it to Emma, like, immediately when I was watching it, because he's so cool, collected, calm, like, and it was later said that he was excited to talk about it, so that just, it shows you that this type of killer no remorse, excited about what happened, happy that he did it.
Right.
That kind of situation.
I mean, like, watching it, it just seems like he's taken himself out of the situation so much that it's like he's like just talking about somebody else. Like, he seems so disconnected and so indifferent about it, which is really scary.
It felt like I was hearing a victim statement. Like, right. That's what it felt like. It felt like he was saying somebody else's words. Like, it was so weird.
It's bizarre.
Gribble recalls that when they broke into the house, Spader whispered to the other two that were with them that nobody was in the house. So they all started talking normally with each other and, you know, just chatting about what you would right before you commit a heinous crime. But then Spader began shushing all of them because, as we recounted before, that Kimberly said something along the lines of, "Who's there?" or "Jamie, is that you?" Something like that. In this court interview, Gribble calls Kimberly Mrs. Cates, and this made me so angry because what fucking right do you have calling her that, you know?
Like, as if he has any sort of respect for her.
Yes. I was like, how dare you? Like, what do you think you're doing? He continued on about how he couldn't really see into the bedroom completely, but he could see some sort of form sit up on the left side of the bed. Then he goes on to say that things started to get quote-unquote weird and that he has quite a bit of difficulty describing the events because he had never felt this way before. So I take it to be like when people say, oh, I blacked out when this happened, you know, like it's that adrenaline that just takes over. He said that this was when Steve, as he calls him, went over to the right side of the bed, and before Christopher knew it, he was walking towards the left side of the bed. Gribble recalls that he never thought, like, oh, I should walk to the left side of the bed and kill this girl. But instead it was more of a, my body's doing this without my control, but I'm definitely okay with it. It's not funny. It's like, that's just the way it was. Like, he was talking about it, and he was like, yeah, no, I just, like, felt like that was what I had to do.
That and is I was like, so weird.
That's so scary. Like, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
He continued on to tell the court that he saw Spader begin to hack at the bed in front of them, saying that he didn't think Spader even knew what he was hitting at that point. It was just a mindless hacking. As quick as he began to hear screaming from the mother, the screaming was silenced. And not long after, he says, he stabbed the quote-unquote form that was in front of him.
Oh.
Which is obviously Jamie, as we know.
See, that's like another way of like dehumanizing and like desensitizing himself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he like never even, very rarely does he, I don't think he ever says Jamie's name.
So this is pretty much the entirety of the court interview that I found, but there are some other interviews while in court, such as him discussing how the police arrested him. When he was being arrested, he asked the officers what charge he was being arrested on.
You had to ask?
Like, as if you don't know.
That just blew my mind. I was like, what kind of pretentious ass are you that you had to ask? You just, literally committed a murder and you had to ask, oh, what am I being arrested on?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like another, like, I don't even know, but it's just like a snarky little thing to do. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. When they told him that he was being charged with murder and potentially capital murder, he didn't initially put the pieces together that the death penalty came along with that sentence. When this was explained to him, he became a little bit more restless in the interrogation room and began talking to the investigator about his family. Now, we said earlier that we would touch on Gribble's schooling background, so take that pin out because here we go. One of the main reasons that Gribble tried to justify his crime was the fact that he was homeschooled. Now, that is pretty broad and generalized, so let's just back it up here. Gribble was homeschooled by his mother, Tamara, and he was also a very dedicated Boy Scout. During the trial, the parents of Gribble explained how they always tried to teach him right from wrong, and this was said to be true by friends of the family. However, Gribble started to tell a different story and told the court that his mother abused him as a child, saying that she would, quote, regularly pin him to the couch and told him not to make any noises while she popped acne and other sores on his leg, end quote. Which is, one, disgusting. Also, doesn't make sense to me.
I don't understand that at all.
It's very bizarre. Gribble said that the abuse was so bad at times that he had thought about killing her before.
I mean, there must have been more than just that.
I know, like, what? I don't even, that's just very bizarre. Although the mother had denied most of the claims of abuse, she did end up admitting that at one point when Christopher was 5 years old, she spanked him with a wooden spoon so hard that it broke, and Christopher wet himself.
So, clearly we have another example of the abuse there.
Yeah.
But even then, like, I'm sure there's more.
Right. I mean, it's hard to know the exact...
Right.
When it came to deciding what to do with Gribble in court, he entered a plea for insanity. That is so stupid.
Don't even get me started on insanity, please. I can't even deal with that.
He said that it was his homeschooled upbringing that was the reason for committing the crime. What? That doesn't make any fucking sense. Like,
excuse me? The amount of... Okay, granted...
Like, you couldn't come up with anything better?
Granted, I do judge a homeschool kid every now and then.
But, like, I don't think that's a reason to commit murder.
Nope, certainly not.
Right, so...
You're a little weird sometimes, but...
Right. He said that he always wanted to get out and be social, but felt like an outcast because of his upbringing. But clearly this was not going to work for an insanity plea. So on March 25th, 2011, the plea was rejected, and he was sent to serve life in prison without the possibility of parole.
So, what happened to the ringleader here, Steven Spader? So, honestly, I had a very hard time finding out information about him. But I think this is just because he wasn't really the talkative type. Like, Gribble was very talkative and was excited to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. But Steven was not really that way. So, I'm sorry if there's not a lot of information about him or that part of the case. But there's enough. So, moving on. Spader was a 17-year-old high school dropout and former Boy Scout. As well. But Spader kept himself busy with a club he called, quote, the Disciples of Destruction, end quote.
God.
Yeah. So he was trying to gain members for the club. So he planned a sort of initiation. And the initiation was the home invasion of the Cates family.
Oh my God.
So that is why I think that he knew that there were going to be people in there.
Right. Makes sense.
And if he didn't, he said, if there are people in there, you're killing them. Like, that's what he said, you know?
Oh, he said that?
Well, no. I just made that up. But
oh,
I just feel like that's something that he would say.
Right.
In the broadest terms, you know?
Yeah, I do.
The extensive information I have of Spader's account of the murder is basically what Gribble told us in his interview earlier. But as we can tell from Gribble's description of the crime, Spader was relentless with the killing and had no mercy whatsoever. When the sentencing began, Spader told the court that he was happy with his life sentence because he was, quote, the most sick and twisted person you will ever meet, end quote.
Okay.
Cool. Terrifying. Absolutely that horrifying.
That is so weird.
He had absolutely no remorse and considered it to be a sign of weakness if he did. So let's move on from that. The court stated that if he was ever released from prison, he would likely commit similar crimes as to the one that happened at the Cates family.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, him and Gribble both, because Gribble doesn't really see anything wrong with the situation.
Right.
And he's very casual about it. So they both show extreme signs of them potentially doing this again.
Yeah.
So the big thing with this case was that because they were young kids, not young, but they were teenagers, the sentence would be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for the court to decide, like, if they show remorse, if they show signs of not doing this again, like, maybe their sentence would be lighter. Mm-hmm. But the fact that this crime was, number one, gruesome as hell, and there was no remorse involved from anybody, this was tried as a full adult murder, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Spader was sentenced to life in prison and is currently serving his sentence in New Jersey. He originally was serving a sentence somewhere close to here, I think, but he actually got 76 years put onto his life sentence for, like, something else. I don't really know the specifics of it. So basically what he's serving is a life sentence without the opportunity of parole plus 76 years in prison.
Oh, wow. I wonder what he did.
I'm not sure. I know that there was a prison fight at some point, but I'm not sure if he started it or if he was just involved. Or if it was something else to do with the case. Like, I wonder if there's more that the public just doesn't know.
Right.
Which could very well be the case, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the most badass things I've ever heard in my entire life is from this judge that sentenced Spader to his life sentence. She said, her name was Judge Jillian Abramson, and she said, quote, "You will stay in that cage for the rest of your pointless life," end quote.
Oh my god.
That is straight out of a movie. Like, straight out of a movie.
Literally, what a queen.
I could not believe that. I was like, insane. As for the other two people that were there that night of the murder, they are also serving time in prison. I don't know how much time. I'm sure they will never be released. If they are, they're going to be 90 or something like that.
Yeah.
So there are also Autumn Savoy. He was actually released on parole because he was the one that helped hide the evidence. But in 2015, he was released on parole, I'm pretty sure. So that is a little scary. Very scary, actually. But, like, as far as we know, the only part of the crime that he had something to do with was the hiding of some evidence.
Right.
So there you go. But Jamie Cates just recently graduated college, and she's doing great and is very successful. And same with her father, David. Obviously, I don't think you can ever move on from something like this completely, but I hope that they are doing well.
Yeah.
They have set up a Kimberly Cates Memorial Scholarship Fund, and they do golf tournaments, races, stuff like that. So if you want to donate, there's a link in the bio of this podcast, and feel free to donate to them. But I hope you guys can sleep good tonight after that, because I know I will not. But that is all we have for you today. Make sure you listen to our previous podcasts and stuff like that, because we have quite a few now.
Yes, we do.
And you should go back and listen to them, because I would love for you to do that. Go and watch Extreme Cults and Beliefs, and Cold Case Files, Unsolved Mysteries, all of those, and tell me your thoughts on it, because I would love to know. And also, but also, if you want to hear any specific case, paranormal or true crime, let us know. We've gotten some suggestions, so I would love to have more. And just if you want to pop in and say hi, you can DM us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is SpookMePodcast. And then, or you can email us at SpookMePod@gmail.com. We would love for you to talk to us.
Please. We want friends. Talk to us.
But that is that, you guys.
Yes.
And we will, you will hear us next week.
Bye.
Bye.